Well, hello again, Turdville. This is, of course, a three-day holiday weekend here in the U.S. We officially call it Labor Day. It's the unofficial end of summer. Since it is a three-day holiday weekend, you can only imagine who our podcast guest might be for this weekend. It is, of course, the one and only Jim Willie, the golden jackass himself. He likes to stop by Turdville, and I certainly love to have him here every time we have one of these three-day weekends. So it's time for an update from the jackass. Jim, always good to hear from you. How are you doing today, my friend?
I'm recovering from a pretty nasty flu, but I'm more than a week on the uphill recovery, and I like to say I'm a little over 90% normal, but you know what's normal.
That's about the best I've heard you be normal in years, so I guess 90%, that's pretty good.
Well, you might hear a cough, but I'm doing pretty well. I've got my energy level back, and my appetite is back, and I'm still doing one or two daytime naps just to make sure this thing gets put away. But I did a eucalyptus elixir on a teaspoon yesterday, and it blew my chest right off, and I think it was good.
You know, you talk about your energy and appetite back. I'm wondering if your coat is shiny again, too, and your nose is cold. Everything else? We got you covered?
My hair shirt is shiny.
Okay, good. All right. And before we get started, though most folks know, you are the proprietor of the Hat Trick Letter and GoldenJackass.com. Explain to everybody what the hell that is I just mentioned and why they should be a subscriber.
Well, the website is called www.goldenjackass.com, and on it, there's a bunch of free material. It's my public articles and other interviews like this. But it's really shameless promotion toward the newsletter. It's now 10 years and 4 months along. So the 10-year anniversary was May, and I just had a milestone. And seriously, Mr. Ferguson, I'm just a little taken back. I just had number 10,000. For number of orders, so this is a huge wagon train. I'm just blown away. I'm very pleased by it all. But the newsletter,
excuse me,
the newsletter has two parts. It's the Money War Report, high level things, and the Golden Currency Report, ground level things, mm-hmm. events. And every month there are those two reports. So you know, I hope people can go to the website, browse around, learn a few things. Many people are well-schooled in this, but what I'm noticing is a surprising number of new clients coming in who are not coming back from, say, 2 years in 2009 and 10, and now they're returning. Now, I'm getting a lot of fresh, new subscribers. I think people are beginning to wake up in large numbers. Mm-hmm. I don't say large percentages, because the United States is rather enormous. I don't know what the population is exactly. I think it's around 320 million. But that's a large, fertile ground for new subscribers coming out of nowhere. And I get a lot of people who sign up and say, I followed your work for several months, and I'm kind of new to this, but I signed up, and I'm glad I did, blah, blah, blah. I really didn't understand. When QE began in 2012, I thought it was a good thing. But after reading your work, I see that QE is not a stimulus. It's a guaranteed death sentence. So the people are waking up. And mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot going on. I like to point out that every single sanctions that the United States has imposed has turned out to be shooting itself in the chest, feet, and testicles. Every single one has resulted in tremendous damage self-inflicted. The biggest one to date had been the Iran sanctions, but now we've got the Russian sanctions, and that's all now turning around in the form of doing damage to Europe.
Well, and let's dive right in there, my friend, because the big news that hit yesterday was the announcement that we've, I guess, not such unexpected announcement, but that Russia's state-owned gas company Gazprom was officially going to be accepting not just dollars for payment for gas, but also rubles and, hold your breath, yuan Imagine that. They're going to take yuan, Chinese yuan, for payment as well. What do you think of all this? What is the significance of this and the long-term impact?
Well, I made the forecast back in our spring months this year that Russia will sell energy in yuan as kind of a standby. The dollar is still the global reserve currency. A lot of people think, well, that's going to stand forever. No, it's not. What you've got now is Russia making a challenge for the dollar as a standard for energy trade. At the same time, the Saudis are on the verge of doing the same. So when you've got the number one and two oil producers with Russia and Saudi Arabia, both announcing, and this is all coming, it's not all done yet, but Russia's making its steps. Saudis have done something quite different, but in parallel, they're having monthly huge conferences at the minister level with the Chinese. I call it a love fest. Economic development, petrochemical plants, trading platforms, sovereign wealth funds being initiated, independent of the central bank in Saudi Arabia. Lots and lots of developments. So the United States basically tells Russia, quit using the dollar, we're going to punish you. And what happens is the Russians stop using the dollar and it punishes the United States.
Instead, yeah.
So this is the boomerang again. And then the United States wants to, what I call, export a war using mercenaries. I'm talking vicious, vicious mercenaries who regard human life as nothing, like cockroaches to be stamped on in eastern Ukraine. They're shelling cities.
Yep.
Artillery.
Yep.
And I try to probe certain U.S.-based clients and family and friends and other people that I know, and I don't know a single American who's aware that the United States is behind the Kiev-Ukraine regime. Not a single one that I talk to. So we're pushing the Europeans to sanction Russia, cut back on banking, cut back on trade, you know, work in steps to interrupt commerce. And the Europeans are the losers. The Americans are not. Here's a good rule of thumb. The United States has 10% the amount of commerce with Russia that Europe does.
How about that?
It's a European neighbor. You know, wake up. The voice tells me there are between 3,000 and 5,000 German companies doing business in Russia. They're not going to kiss that goodbye. This is business.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I have a saying that the Germans are extremely protective of their industry and economy. The Americans are not. We outsourced. We're not protective of industry.
We don't have any industry.
Well, we've got some. It's just a very small critical mass. It's hardly a critical mass anymore. All right, so what happened with Russia? They did in May what they call the Holy Grail energy deal,
yep.
Russia and China.
Yep.
Hey, this is a very long-term contract. It's like 20 to 30 years. They need 5 years to complete pipeline networks. This is a huge capital layout. This is a multi-year project. It's going to tie in the Pacific coastal Russia, like Okhotsk, the Bay of Okhotsk, the mm-hmm. Sea of Okhotsk. It's also going to tie in the Arctic. It's going to tie in a lot of Siberia. I mean, gosh, Siberia is bigger than the United States. I mean, people need to understand the size of things when they talk about isolating Russia. What a stupid concept this is. They have 12 time zones.
Yes, they do.
You don't isolate that. So they're teaming up with China. And I said way back in May, in March, in April, watch Russia accept yuan as a, you know, a temporary device for energy sales. They're not ready to do ruble sales. They're going to do more. In fact, what I think we're going to see is with Europe, they're going to do euro and ruble sales. And with China, they're going to do exclusively yuan trade sales. So watch the Saudis, watch OPEC, watch the deals that Russia, you know, starts to integrate with the Persian Gulf nations, and just, you know, kiss goodbye this petrodollar. The petrodollar replaced the U.S. Dollar standard for gold back, you know, in 1971. We got rid of the Bretton Woods gold standard. It was just 2 years later that the United States had agreements with the Arab and other oil-producing nations like Nigeria and Iran. Those are not Arab nations, but they're part of OPEC. In 1973, Kissinger organized – actually, he suggested – this is very new to me in the last several months, but the United States major oil companies and their representative, namely Kissinger, who works for the Rockefellers – people need to understand who is controlling things. Kissinger suggested to the Arabs and Iranians that they quadruple the price of oil so they could be wealthier, so the major oil companies could enjoy that, remember, windfall profit?
Yep. Okay.
And so that the OPEC nations led by the Saudis could recycle their extreme profits into treasury bonds.
Right.
So the recycle was the petrodollar de facto standard. And at the same time, everybody would have more money to buy weapons. Okay, so the petrodollar is a weaponized standard. A weaponized standard to globalize war. All right, now we've got, I think, a major backfire coming on London and Wall Street. Because as you get more ruble trade, hey, look, when you think of the Chinese currency being used by Russia,
right,
oil payments, immediately think, well, gee, the Kremlin's going to convert them to rubles rather quickly. Because they need it for their own
sure.
domestic production, their own – I mean, if they're setting up new oil wells in 60 different sites in Siberia – they don't use yuan. They
right.
use their ruble. Their currency is the ruble. So watch a backfire come on the Wall Street and London bankers who've been gaming the ruble currency.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to drive it down to force inflation inside the Russian economy. And it's going to be demanded for a currency yeah. on the oil trade. I mean, this is really stupid stuff.
Instead, it's going the other direction. It reminds me of it's a part of the part and parcel of the whole process. Here, the U.S. has been forcing this issue, like you said. I mean, we've got what more evidence do you need than that Victoria Nuland tape, where they're obviously the invisible hand behind all of the coup and everything else that happened in Ukraine back in February, and ever since, the U.S. has been parading along as if we hold the cards, as if we are the ones that are going to sanction Russia, and we're going to show everybody who's boss, when instead we don't hold any of the cards.
Hold one card. We hold a first strike nuclear.
Yeah, that's about the only one. You're right.
And I don't think it's ever going to be used.
No, of course not.
It's going to be threatened, but never be used. And you know, even that is a very, very long story.
So
you know, the ruble is not ready for prime time. You know,
sure.
Its stage is not ready.
Sure.
Its offices are not ready. Its windows are not ready. Its cable lines and connections with the oil world are not ready. I think the United States jumped into Ukraine for two big purposes: to blame Russia for the failure of the United States, mm-hmm. but also to force Russia to prematurely move into the ruble as a trade settlement currency for their energy. And what they did was a jump shift into the yuan.
Interesting.
Well, very interesting.
I want to go back to the sanctions, though, because, I mean, clearly that's not working. They're backfiring. The Europeans, as you mentioned, have such significant economic ties, particularly Germany, with Russia, that they don't want to go along with this, especially when it's just trumped up U.S. Conflict in the first place. What do you see going on there? How do you see all that eventually playing out, even with what appear to be increasing hostilities?
Well, there's a rule of thumb that I like to describe for U.S. government activity. If it doesn't work, amplify it.
That's true, yeah. Throw more money at it and make it worse.
Can you find any example where we've done anything but that?
Right.
QE did not work, so we went to QE2. Yeah. That didn't work, so we went to Operation Twist. That didn't work, so we went to QE3 with some taper talk.
Yep.
So taper talk is basically lying. You know, 0% didn't work, so we moved it down to 0.25%. I call 0% exaggerating when it's really like 0.5% for a while, and then it's 0.25%. And now the Europeans have negative interest rates.
Yep.
Now, by the way, people, negative interest rate means that the bankers can steal whatever they declare to be the negative part.
Yeah, good point.
So it's just, you know, more theft. The most important hidden background item factor for this entire sanctions and Ukraine war is that Putin is sitting on the Snowden files with burning, blazing evidence that 9/11 was an inside job.
Oh, well, that's interesting.
And he promised in March to reveal the information, which begs huge questions as part of sanctions and backfire, this whole topic. Where will the information be released, and when will the information be released? And I think the answer is the major German publications.
Well,
because Germany is fed up with all this crap. But to get, you know, to your basic question on the sanctions, I'd like to remind people that the European Union Commission, think of it as a kind of a triumvirate sitting in the White House that is not elected. They've got their own little White House in Europe and Brussels and wherever else. And these are unelected people,
right,
with former positions of power. And who are they? I don't think Americans can name one single EU commissioner.
Von Rupi or whatever. That's about the only guy I can come up with.
Well, I could name a couple. I'd rather not, because I'll probably mispronounce it.
Yeah, I hear you.
There's one on the way out. He has to do with his pet project of suing Gazprom for monopolistic pricing practices in Brussels with their glass and steel offices. Okay, it's all very cute and
right,
very impressive. No, these people were not elected, yet they're waging war and they're doing damage to the economy that they supposedly preside over. Okay?
Okay.
That's interesting. It's not working. Okay. We had the Iran sanctions. It resulted in a powerful workaround in oil for gold.
Yep.
The Turkish intermediary.
Yep.
Very interesting. Now we've got Russian firms, Russian banks and Russian oligarchs being blocked out of dollar accounts, blocked out of dollar flow. They can't use the dollar. I mean, there was a recent case where a Russian minister had a wife who was involved in a surgery, and she couldn't use her visa because it got blocked out. Well, now Russia has got a workaround that's effective. They're using the Chinese major credit card called UnionPay. And for those Americans who never heard of it, it's the number one credit card in the world. Okay? We don't have even the biggest credit cards in the world anymore. China does. They've got something like 3.4 billion users of UnionPay. So, I once saw UnionPay. A friend showed me a credit card. I said, "What's that on the back?" It's not Direct Plus and Cirrus.
Right.
But it's got UnionPay on it. He said, "Yeah, it's a major Chinese Taiwan organization now for credit cards." Oh, wow. Look at that. Interesting. All right. So now Russia has decided, we've had enough of you idiots poking sticks at us. And the Russian bear, you know, I like to make the point that the Russian bear is powerful. It's not just big. We like to think of them as primitive, and our stupid president said Russia doesn't make anything.
Says they're just a regional power, yeah.
Well, gee, I think they're in the top three ranking for the supply of oil, gas, copper, aluminum, tin,
right,
iron, cobalt, strontium, vanadium,
palladium.
Should I go on?
No.
What a stupid comment.
Yes.
From our uneducated ignoramus sitting in the White House. So Russia announced, okay, you want to play these games? We'll play too. We're not going to import any of your food. We're not going to import any of your fruits, vegetables, meat, fish, poultry, whatever. A few days ago, we had a huge demonstration in Spain. They're going to have peaches and other agricultural produce, fruits, just rotting in the warehouses. So is this how the United States punishes Russia?
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost laughable. Because in my August report, I pointed out how Russia has already lined up Argentina, Chile, Ecuador, and Brazil to supply them tonnage of fruits and vegetables and meats. Okay, you know, was this arranged when Putin sat in the press box, or not the elite box, for the World Cup final?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Okay, this is how Russia works. They prepare for a sanctions response and get their alternative supply lines lined up. What's the alternative the United States lined up for Europe? They told them, well, with all our shale oil and gas, we'll make up everything that Russia is cut off from in supplying Europe. This is stupidity.
Yeah, yeah, naivete.
Unbelievable stuff going on. I think we're starting to see now pressures on the unelected. I like to always put in the word unelected EU commissioners. Pressures coming from the farm community, from the business sector. The Germans are angry. They're very protective. I like to tell the story that in the 80s and 90s, there was a lot of pressure to move industry to the cheaper emerging market nations like India, Pakistan, and the Pacific Rim, Singapore, Taiwan, Hong Kong. All these different nations got tremendous amounts of U.S. businesses doing their outsourcing to those locations. Germany did not. Germany thought, gee, that's suicide.
Yeah, that's not a good idea.
So United States sends a tremendous slice of its legitimate industry income to Asia and other emerging market nations. And what does Germany do? They made a very important national trade pact. They reduced the income of unionized workers. I'm talking like Mercedes, Audi, and BMW plants, Volkswagen plants, Siemens plants. They reduced the unionized income by 15%. They cut into their fringe benefits a little bit also. And a social promise pact was made in Germany. We will not remove the jobs and send them to Asia or other emerging market nations. And you must make the concession to reduce the cost a little bit. And it worked out. And Germany remained an industrial power. What happened to the United States? It just, you know, just fell into an abyss of a series of asset bubbles that we became dependent on. I started this newsletter, the Hetrick Letter, in 2004 when I realized, my gosh, we think we can make an economic recovery on a housing bubble?
And fast food?
Yeah. Well, redefine what industry is. Manufacturing,
right,
now,
right.
Including McDonald's. Yeah. I thought, okay, this is 2004. I said, by 2007, 2008, and 2009, the housing bubble is going to go to hell. It's going to break. And it's going to take the U.S. economy with it. We're going to have a systemic failure. We're going to have an insolvent banking system. And I was told, oh, what a dumb bunch of things to say, jackass. You're proving that you're an idiot. Okay, well, here we are, and they all happened.
Yes, they did. Well, and let's – I want to kind of continue to utilize your expertise in and because obviously you've got a global list of contacts of people you trust and you talk to. And they're able to kind of alert you to things that are going on. And it certainly looks like that this whole sanctions regime, as you pointed out, is failing. I mean, it's doomed to fail. And now there's this growing counter reaction against the U.S. that almost is leading to isolate the U.S. And not only the sanctions, but all the spying that we've done, you know, all the other, just all the garbage that we've done ostensibly to our friends. It would seem, like you said, that going forward, the key really to all of this maybe is Germany. I mean, would you agree with that? I mean, what do you see going? What else do you see going on there, and how this is going to play out going forward?
I like to point out something as a preface. I've talked about the fascist business model for years. I've talked about it for almost 10 full years. What is the fascist business model? Well, it's a merger of the state, you know, government,
right,
with major corporations,
right,
the biggest of the corporations.
Yes.
And what they do is they institute fraud, and they permit it by making it, you know, unpunished.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And for the United States, it's been major weapons manufacturers, major banks, and say pharmaceutical companies who are involved in vaccine killers.
Energy companies too.
Energy companies. Okay, I'm sorry. Right. Energy companies, banks, weapons, and pharmaceuticals. And let's throw in the major news network while we're at it,
okay,
because they're full of the propaganda. All right. So what has happened? It is remarkable, Mr. Ferguson, in the last few months, we have seen Exxon, Shell, British Petroleum, Boeing, and a few others all thumb their nose at the U.S. government and say, your sanctions really don't apply to us. Okay, if I had told you a few years ago that major U.S. and Western corporations would thumb their nose at the U.S. government and showed defiance from inside their own chambers, which would be a direct contradiction of the fascist business model, I think you would have said, that's not going to happen.
Right.
It did happen, and it is happening. So the sanctions are happening in the U.S. government offices, but we're seeing numerous – oh, I like to point to Exxon. It's my favorite because it's very significant. It's a Rockefeller company. It's the old Standard Oil. It's Esso. It's Exxon. It's ExxonMobil now. It had Kissinger as its main agent in the 70s. We have a major break going on right now between the Rothschild banks and the Rockefeller energies. This is extremely big, and we don't have time to get into it all, but it's part and parcel of this sanctions defiance. But let's get to the main thrust of your question. The U.S., I think, is going to impose sanctions on 90% of the world, including its allies, and earn unspeakable isolation.
Mm-hmm.
And then quarantine. And then the next major project will be to euthanize its leadership.
And we do it all out of just the arrogance of thinking that we are all powerful. But I don't mean to interrupt you.
Well, we think we're the world's policemen.
Right.
And what we've done in recent months is use U.S. government legal prosecution and the power to fine bank subsidiaries and force them into admission of guilt statements. We've used that and abused that.
Mm-hmm.
And The Voice had a nice phrase for it several months ago. He said, watch this BNP Paribas case. Watch this UBS and Credit Suisse case. What they're doing is they're imposing fines as an income source on the private banking sector.
Of other countries.
On other countries, yes. We've got these Sudan, Cuba, and Iran sanctions. You violated it, so we're going to charge you $9 billion.
Unbelievable.
And what's the reaction? But the French central banker said, his name is Noyer. Noyer came right out and said, you know, we really need to use the dollar less. There's no reason why two countries need to trade in dollars. And he's referring basically to Russia and France. And internal to Europe, they use the euro. They don't need the dollar, and they're not going to use the dollar. So the United States is going to win isolation from its rampant imposition of sanctions. I like to point out four very important violations that Germany has now identified for the United States. You mentioned the NSA spying.
Yeah.
This is not eavesdropping to find out where Merkel's going to dinner or what her favorite sex toy is. This is much more serious. This is corporate espionage. This is the Siemens telecom networks being invaded so that any conversation that the U.S. government wants to just listen in on, they can do so. And that means members of the German parliament. It means members of the German ministry staff
yep.
who are working with Russia and China on big trade deals, big commercial deals, and possibly a dollar alternative.
Yep.
We're talking about corporate espionage, trade secret theft, and monitors of their movement against the dollar. Okay, that's one violation. That's very serious.
Yeah.
The second one is Euro central bank monetizations. The Germans have already had pronouncements by their Bundesbank. That's their central bank.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want Draghi to print money to cover European sovereign bonds anymore. They don't want it. They know what inflation is. The United States has adopted hypermonetary inflation. It's QE. It's very destructive to capital. It's not stimulative to jack shit, except bond speculation and coverage of Wall Street bond portfolios.
Yep.
All right, so that's the second violation. They don't want any more hypermonetary inflation by the Draghi Euro Central Bank. Third one is they consider this whole war to be a threat against the German economy and in particular its energy supply from Russia. 30% of all German crude oil in their usage comes from Russia. 40% of all German natural gas for their usage comes from Russia. They don't want to cut it off. They're not going to cut it off. That's the third threat slash violation. And the fourth one is an old one. I just heard some interesting information that 2 years ago when the German parliament demanded their official gold account be repatriated from the New York Fed,
It
didn't come out of nowhere. It came in response to the Germans getting wind of the Obama plan to make a war in Ukraine in 3 or 4 years. This is all very much programmed. So in 2011 and 12, the Germans heard about the Ukraine plan to make scorched earth, the firewall, to control the transit lines for natural gas. And the Germans thought, this is messed up. You guys are crazy. You guys are warmongers. You're insane. This is all suicidal economically. So we want our gold back from you idiots. All right, that's the fourth violation, gold confiscation. Merkel right now is involved in some very delicate private peace talk initiatives with Putin and the Kremlin. And it has basically two components. Recognition of Crimea being annexed by Russia with full ownership and control of their naval base in the Black Sea. And in response, Europe gets, in particular Germany, gets guaranteed oil and gas supply from Russia. Gee, that sounds constructive. No wonder the United States doesn't like it.
Can you blame
them? United States wants destruction.
Well,
and I'll tell you why. This is a very simple point. The United States wants to wreck the European economy so that it goes down the tubes with the U.S. economy so that they can install across the Western world a series of totalitarian states from the dead economies that they're making.
I can see that as well, and I know there are a lot of folks listening that are nodding their heads saying that's exactly the plan. I want to, though, direct you back, though. And first of all, I want to thank you for being so generous with your time, Jim. We've already done this, been at it for a half hour, and I know everybody appreciates it, but I know your time is valuable, too. And I want to steer you towards something else, though, that's been on my mind. It's kind of using this as a segue. You touched on it earlier. We have, besides all these violations of German, let's just call it sovereignty, and all of the other things that we are doing to make matters worse in Europe, one of those things are these investigations and these fines of the big French banks and the big Swiss banks. How long is it going to be now before, I mean, the next violation would seem to be that we would investigate and attempt to fine the big German banks? Do you see that coming?
I think it's in progress right now.
Well, that would be a rather significant development, would it not?
Well, yeah. And in fact, we've got some preliminary accusations, like indictment charges. The United States government has actually told Deutsche Bank that you're involved in derivatives manipulation, forex corruption, meaning currency corruption, and more.
Right.
These are precisely what the London and New York banks are involved in.
Right.
Yeah, we're going to now charge the Germans with the same thing.
To hang it all on them.
What we're building up to here, Mr. Ferguson, is something that I regard to be a major breaking point with the U.S. and Germany. We're basically telling the Germans that you've got two choices. You stick with this war, you honor the sanctions and join them, and therefore you permit damage to your economy. I call it sinking your economy. Instead of doing the opposite, which is what I believe Germany will do, which is to work more closely with Russia and China, to use more the ruble and the yuan currency, to help build more channels with RMB hub facilities like in Frankfurt that work directly with China and Russia, and come up with a gold-based BRICS currency. And by doing so and turning the back on the dollar, Germany will therefore agree to sink their banking system. So the Germans have two alternatives. Stick with the war and the sanctions and sink their economy,
mm-hmm.
or work with Russia and China on a dollar alternative, namely a return to the gold standard, which is the solution. And by doing so, they will sink the banking system. And I got confirmation from The Voice that that is precisely what they're going to do. And if we go after Deutsche Bank, I think the retaliation by the Germans will be to sink a couple of German banks, forcing a contagion to a couple of French banks, forcing a contagion to Spanish, Italian, and Portuguese banks, forcing a contagion to topple some U.S. and London banks, and we will be on with the dogs of war on the financial bank toppling.
The ultimate backfire right there.
Right. We are going to go after Deutsche Bank. We're going to continue with these numerous violations against Germany. And Germany is going to say, we've had enough. We're going to work toward the gold standard. And we're going to allow a derivative failure to begin. We're going to sink a couple banks that are insolvent. We're going to create some bad banks. I love that bad bank concept. Mm-hmm. What a joke. But we're going to create basically a banking cesspool with a big fence around it, and we're going to pretend that it won't hurt us, but it will. And what Germany is going to essentially do is abandon the euro, abandon the European Union, and abandon NATO, which I think will have tremendous consequences for important things like the biggest medical military base in the world. And that's Rammstein.
Right.
I think the Germans are going to say, we want you Americans out.
Yeah, that would be something to be watching for. I was just thinking that myself.
And furthermore, another consequence, we don't want your American heroin to go through our German Rammstein base anymore. Okay. It goes all through the NATO air bases. Heroin.
Out of Afghanistan?
Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Right.
That would certainly be, you like you were talking about earlier, about the anger that is building against these EU commissioners. You know, all of a sudden this week, there's a story that comes out about Christine Lagarde, as if that suddenly just became news. You know, obviously that was trotted out at the right time to show, the significance of it, to bring that out into the forefront right now. That would be another thing, you know, if all of a sudden there are stories of German outrage and questioning why after 70 years there are still U.S. troops on German soil. I mean, that would certainly be a signal that changes afoot. Wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I think we're going to start seeing some agreements on phase out.
Right.
It's not going to be sudden, pardon me. It's not going to be sudden. I think we're going to see something like a five-step reduction in U.S. troops on German soil, because the United States is actually going to help this along. They're going to say, if you Germans start working more closely with Russia and China on a dollar alternative, they're not going to call it the gold standard. They're going to call it a dollar alternative. If you start using the dollar less in trade, the consequence is going to be less treasury bonds in their banking system.
Mm-hmm.
Most people who follow trade don't quite comprehend. You reduce the dollar in trade settlement, you therefore reduce the need for treasury bonds sitting in the entire banking system of, say, South Korea, of, say,
anybody.
Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
So when they start diversifying, that's when the United States will say, these are terrorist actions.
Yeah.
We always equate diversifying away from the dollar in treasury bonds, in foreign ownership of U.S. government debt. We always equate that to be terrorist activity.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think it's going to come in a very big way. I'd like to point out that Obama is going to become very well known in the history books for two things. He's setting records for two things. I don't care about his peace prize. I'd like to know how much narcotics money was used to pay for that out of Oslo. Obama's going to be known for two things: the most rounds of golf and the most fundraising events.
Yeah.
Apart from that, this is a do-nothing, empty chair of a presidency.
Yeah. We've known that since, even before he was elected. I mean,
there's a joke out that's pretty funny, Mr. Ferguson.
You keep calling me Mr. Ferguson. It just cracks me up.
I have a hard time with that first name.
You can call me Craig if you want.
Okay, Craig. we've got a joke running around. There were some beheadings recently by ISIS and maybe with cooperation by the Saudi government. I don't really know. But Obama was asked, what do you have to say about these beheadings? And he said, all I got to say about it, I'd be heading for the golf course.
Oh, God.
Okay, so this is what our president is all about. I mean, Obamacare is a wrecking ball for small business. Small business, for those who like to study economics, small business is the heart and soul of the U.S. economy. And it's in deep, deep trouble.
Yeah, it's the only thing we have left.
Okay, I'd like to also point out that Christine Lagarde is under siege. And remember that her predecessor was Dominique Strauss-Kahn.
Yeah, we know what happened to him.
Well, do we really know?
Well, do we? But did he do it? How much of a setup was that? And people recall he was the guy that was apparently accosted his maid in his hotel room and then made a beeline to Kennedy to get.
That's all the story that made the press.
Right.
But what was the story that led up to that? He was demanding that the United States government demonstrate with independent accounting its gold reserves.
I don't recall that part.
With a crime for Dominique Strauss-Kahn.
Imagine that.
Okay.
Imagine that.
All right. Now we've got Christine Lagarde, I think, who's a caretaker do-nothing.
Right.
Who occupies a desk with an empty bank account. The IMF has no account. Anytime you hear the IMF had a loan like 2 months ago to Ukraine, that was not IMF money. That was printed money from Draghi's Eurocentral Bank.
From us. Yeah.
Hey, yeah, a little money thrown in by Bernanke and Yellen. Is that who's the Fed chairman now? Is it Yellen? I don't give a crap.
Does it matter? Yeah.
Does it matter? No. So all this money came through the IMF offices, which does not necessarily mean it was IMF money. Okay, so now Lagarde is being charged with some political fraud. I don't know what she did. But, you do a close examination and an independent audit, and you might find that she's involved with 50 felonies. Not one or two, but 50. These are criminals, one after the other. The European Commission has a huge reputation. These Brussels guys, they have a huge reputation of being involved with pedophilia. I'm talking about murdering children.
Jeez.
This is what they're all about. And they're unelected, and they want a war sponsored by the U.S., directed by the U.S., organized by the U.S., designed by the U.S. to do damage to the European economy. Why? Because they want to make a big trade union with the Europeans and the United States. What is this, Lord of the Flies?
Well, and I pointed at this out again yesterday to everybody, and I've been trying to do so. It's almost like I set a timer for myself, and maybe I should. People need to recall that on May 1st of this year, the IMF, I guess, issued a $17 billion bailout package, they called it, to help Ukraine pay Gazprom, pay their bills, pay their interest on their debt, everything else. The key condition to that them receiving $17 billion, the IMF has said you have to go invade and secure your southeast. It is the IMF that demanded the civil war start in Ukraine. It is the IMF whose hands hold the blood of the innocent citizens of Donetsk and Luhansk, those that have been ruthlessly bombed by the militia of Ukraine. It is the IMF that did all this, Jim. And it just fits in exactly with what you just said.
The unelected officials in numerous different agencies and commissions are involved with warmongering, and these are not elected people. I think we're going to eventually see the Ukraine regime, the Kiev regime. I think they're going to fall. I made forecasts, and they were not correct. I made them in March. I said in 3 months we're going to see the fall of this regime. All right, well, 3 months was June, and we did not. So what's my response? I think by before the end of the year, we're going to see some devastating events and a lot of exodus of these fascists.
Well, Jim, you know what no one's talking about? This dawned on me last night. I mean, it's just been kind of a given in the Western press that the fascist militias of the Kiev government will eventually win that civil war. But in the last 2 weeks, the tide has turned. And the Eastern Ukrainians, the Novorossiya guys, are on the march. What if those militia just crumble and all of a sudden the folks from Donetsk and Luhansk end up marching on Kiev? That would kind of shake things up, wouldn't it?
Well, I think it's already happening.
Yeah exactly. Exactly. No one's even talking about that possibility.
This is going to sound pretty funny, but I'm just going to share with you some of my sources.
Lay it on me.
This has nothing to do with The Voice, nothing to do with gold. All right, I've got a client who's got an American name, American background, U.S. background, and he lives in the suburbs of Kiev. He's a subscriber. He's got a Gmail account. Okay, I've got another fellow who lives in the United States and whose wife is from Kiev and makes phone calls to her family and friends every week back in Kiev. Yeah. Okay, I've got another client who's a Hungarian businessman who's got clients all through Kiev and Bulgaria and Austria and is trying to keep me updated on the South Stream gas pipeline from Russia. All right, then I've got another fellow who just used my squirrel mail. He's not a client. He used my squirrel mail and said, "Hi, my name is Jaroslav. I live in St. Petersburg, Russia. I'm well informed about a lot of things going on, and I'd like to provide you some information so that you have improvement to the quality of your work, which is good." I said, "Sure." After a month, I gave him a free subscription. He sends me stuff every week. He gave me information on how successful has the planting season been. And what I'm hearing is that it's 80% planted, which means 20% never went to the planting stage. And now I'm trying to get more information. What about, allocation of trucks and diesel fuel and people to run them to gather the harvest and take it to market? And what I'm hearing is it's all messed up. I don't care so much about how much got planted. I care about what potential do they have for the harvest.
We're talking about wheat in Ukraine?
Wheat in Ukraine, and it's a whole lot more than just wheat.
Gotcha.
Okay, and they're in big, big trouble. There, I think what we're going to see is the harvest season a failure and the march on Kiev being violent.
So now no food and no heat as we go into the winter, basically. Yeah, that's usually a recipe for civil unrest, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and it's a whole lot worse than that when you go to discuss the troops. I don't even know what to call them.
Mercenaries.
Well, the troops who are fighting on behalf of the Kiev regime.
Right, they're mercenaries.
I don't know what they're called.
They're fascist mercenaries from around the world, neo-Nazis.
Yeah, they've also got a lot of Ukrainian soldiers who are conscripted and you know, they're just drafted, and you've got to fight for Kiev, for the regime, for the cause. Okay, what I'm hearing, and this is from dozens and dozens of stories, numerous stories, different sources, that these Kiev loyalists, let's call it that, the Kiev regime fighters, they're being surrounded, they're out of water, they're out of ammunition, they're
yep.
out of supplies,
yep.
and they're being just killed. So what they're doing now for the last 30 to 40 days, they're putting down their arms, they're putting down their trucks, and they're walking to Russia, where they're not being brutalized. They're being welcomed with a meal, a blanket, and, you know, hey, it's great to have you here. And, you know, in time, surely, they're going to be fighting against the Kiev regime. But these people are now in loud complaints to Kiev right now, saying, you're abandoning us. You don't keep us supplied. We're not just talking about ammunition. We're talking about food. How do these people eat if they're going to fight?
Right.
They have water, ammunition, food, supplies. And whenever I hear the word supply, I just think of toilet paper.
And an army marches on its stomach, right?
Well, yeah, and they're apparently marching with shit in their pants.
Yeah, that too. Yeah. And it's...
This just will not stand, and I think the harvest season is going to be the turning point. And we're only a month away from that.
It's all... It is all... it's going to be a very interesting remainder of the year. And... Jim, I feel this is probably a good time for us to wrap. We've been at this for almost an hour, and though I know there are probably some out there that say, "Turd, shut the hell up, keep on talking. I got nothing else to do this weekend." But in fairness to everybody else,
well, let me add one little point.
All right, please do.
This is an underlined note that I have. China announced a couple weeks ago that they're putting a delay on their full convertibility of their Chinese yuan. Okay, what does that mean? It means that they're not going to make it readily available for the Chinese yuan to be converted to Thai baht currency,
right.
to
okay.
Colombian peso currency, to Indian rupee currency, to New Zealand dollar currency.
Right.
Okay, they're going to delay that. They're not ready. Their full capital account is not ready. They made a Mickey Mouse statement. I don't think it was true. It's just their statement that they don't want to introduce some instability from a flood of new money coming into the Chinese economy and financial system. No, I think they're not ready with all the different windows, channels, and offices that must be connected to make a fully convertible yuan currency. I don't think they're ready. This is a very difficult task. I've had a couple of different websites and people, like the editors of the website, they contact me and say, Jim, could you explain this? Because people are now saying that you're claiming that the Chinese yuan is not going to be a global reserve alternative currency. I said, no, that's not what I said. The news is that it's not ready to be fully convertible. All that means is exactly that. You cannot convert readily to all the secondary and tertiary currencies. You can convert to the euro and the British pound and the yen, the dollar.
Ruble.
That's not really difficult. That's not new. No. What's happening now is what we're seeing is perhaps a delay in some of the full flourishing of the Shanghai Free Trade Zone. Its main centerpiece was to be the full convertibility of the yuan, RMB, renminbi currency. They're not ready yet. So what I'm hearing now instead is China in the Shanghai Free Trade Zone is working to expand enormous amounts of industrial connections. You know, supply and inventory for industrial metals, things like that. You know, apart from all their inventory problems that they have had regarding I don't want to get into all that, you know, regarding, say, copper being used as an intermediary instead of, say, commercial paper. In the United States, years ago, 10 years ago, we used to use mortgage bonds as commercial paper for supply network replenishment. Well, China tried to use copper plates, And they got in trouble because some of it disappeared. And I think some of it was stolen, and there's fraud here and there. And you look closely, I think you'll see some U.S. banks. But this announcement by the Chinese government of a delay in their full convertibility, this is not bad news. It's just a delay of the good news. The good news is that sooner or later, China and Russia with Europe, I'm talking Germany and France at their side.
Mm-hmm.
Russia, China, Germany, and France at their side are going to be working on full convertibility of the yuan. Temporary gold trade notes will be used, which I think are going to be interchangeable with the Chinese yuan. That'll be the real convertibility, convertibility to gold. I don't care about convertibility to the Colombian peso and Thai baht.
Right.
That's not really high on my list. What I care about is the Chinese currency convertibility to gold. And I think it's coming. I think they've kind of made a decision. Let's work on this gold convertibility and put to the backside conversion immediately and easily to the secondary currencies.
Yeah.
It's not as important as gold.
I mean, it'll get there eventually. It's just not something that has to be there on day one.
Right.
Well, Jim, just fantastic. I mean, and I think for folks that you know, can see where you're going and can understand the logic and the rationale behind all of it, I mean, they just, frankly, they need to keep in touch with you. You know, we can only do this every couple of months or so. I think the best thing for people to do, if you want to stay on top of this and you believe and understand what Jim is saying, is to subscribe to the Hat Trick Letter. So please tell everybody one more time where they can find you, how the Hat Trick Letter works, and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, it's www.goldenjackass.com. There's a lot of free information, free articles, free YouTube-type podcasts like this, other interviews. But it's the newsletter that I'm promoting. There's a tremendous additional amount of information and forecasts and analysis behind it and sourced information and quotes in the two publications for the Hat Trick Letter. It's the Money War Report and the Golden Currency Report. I hope people sign up. It's a wagon train that's really growing, and I've noticed that in the last few years, many competitors have just fallen by the wayside.
Yeah.
I made a big decision in 2008 advising my client base to get rid of their mining stocks. Just go with golden currency, and you know you're all about. I'm sorry, golden coin. It's coins and bars. What am I saying?
Gotcha.
Gold and silver coins and bars. Got distracted there, stapling the notes for this talk. But you're big about the physical coins and bars, and I think that is the way to protect yourself. We have a record number of small North American mining companies that have gone down 90% in value in the last few years. We also have a record number of North American mining stocks that are selling for one penny or less. These are not good records. I didn't anticipate it would be this devastating. I thought it would be bad in the spring months of 2008 when I told my entire client base, buy gold and silver, coins and bars. My preference is silver bars. I think this turned out to be a tremendously good piece of advice. And I don't expect, I mean, I hear stupid arguments like, well, the mining stocks are so cheap. Yeah, they can still go down 50% more in the next year. You want to be holding them? I don't. I don't want to have anything to do with them. And, you know, they are victims. These mining stocks are victims of inflation just like the Federal Reserve. They print their shares to cover their costs, to cover their executive bonuses, and even to pay the way for that next project where they're selling at a suppressed price. Now, this is not a good story. The good story is buy as much gold and silver bars and coins as you can find supply for. Because I don't think the supply is going to be all that available much longer. I have no idea where it's coming from right now.
Well, and especially with the, like you said, the impending eventuality of the return of some type of gold-backed system. I just, again, obviously, if you are concerned about where this is all headed, if you are a stacker of metal, if you are just simply curious and just want to learn from one of the smartest guys I know, please check out goldenjackass.com and the Hat Trick Letter. Jim, you've been, like I said, extraordinarily generous. We're almost at an hour. I want to thank you so much. I want to for doing this. I want to wish you a relaxing holiday weekend if you can. And again, give you an open invitation to do this again sometime soon.
Well, it's been a pleasure, Craig. I always love coming on. And we actually have Labor Day in Costa Rica in June.
Well, there you go.
It's just right. a day off where there's no financial corrupted markets that are controlled to observe. And I actually, you know, a weird thing happened in just the last month. Back in 2010, they discontinued CNBC across the major cable networks of Costa Rica. No more CNBC. A month ago, they discontinued Bloomberg Financial. I have no U.S. financial network available, period.
Just another reason to move there, if you ask me.
Yeah, and you know, just come on down. The pretty Latinas fall out of trees. Every year is a new crop. They fall out of trees.
Oh,
it's amazing. God. I'm having a lot of fun here, but I'm not a typical gringo. I don't just collect the Latinas to spit them out. I try to get involved in some of their lives and help them with school and do various things. I'm a different guy. I take a lot of heat from a few Americans who I regard as scumbags.
Well, and there you have it, folks. The latest from Jim Willie. Of course, his website is notyourtypicalgringo.com. TheGoldenJackass.com. I'm going to start using that. I think this is my friend, not your typical gringo, Jim Willie. I like that.
Yeah, well, I tell you, there are a lot of bad gringos here.
Yes, and there are. A lot of bad gringos in New York and London.
No, I understand that, but there are a lot of people who have this mistaken notion that the good gringos escaped to Costa Rica. No, so do a lot of con artists.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, I know some guys who try to entertain a woman with kids and say, you know, you be my buddy for the next week, and I'll give you a few $100. And they just starts a fight on Sunday night and tells her to get the F out of here.
Yeah.
You know, they're con men. They're men who are working for the U.S. government, trying to gather information on hidden accounts and hidden online business activity, trying to get their way out of like probation on prison. There are a lot of really scummy Americans here. I've met several. I actually don't hang out with too many of them. I got a couple who are, you know, in constant little bickering fun battles with me, and I try to turn it to sports instead. I told this one guy a few weeks ago, I want to write a book on all the really bad businessmen that I've met in Costa Rica. And your name is top on my list. You seems like you have about 6 failed business ventures. Can I interview you? Because you're my number one idiot. I mean, there are a lot of very weird Americans here. And there are a lot of good ones.
Well, you're one of the good ones, my friend. And again, I just can't thank you enough for spending time here and for all you do in sharing your intellect and wisdom and experience through the Hat Trick Letter. I hope we can do this again soon. I don't know. I got to think about when the next 3-day holiday is. Hopefully there's one before Thanksgiving. But even if that's not the case, we'll get you back on hopefully soon, because I know everybody loves hearing from you. I hope you have it.
There's Columbus Day and there's Thanksgiving.
Oh, there you go. Well, have yourself a good weekend. Thank you again for all you do, and we'll sure keep in touch.
All right. It's a pleasure being on. Take care.
All right, my friend.